Hey, buddy, welcome to Matt Men, your source for all things professional wrestling. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the one, the only, the king of beta testing, Rich Stambolian.
Give me all your beta games. I want to test them and make sure there are no bugs before they go out. It's a service to the gaming community.
Rich had some trouble connecting, and then I got the wrong number for the show episode because we have this whole system where everything is automated now. Everything is automated here, top to bottom. So I got to have everything set perfectly in order for the show to go through its automatic process of being edited all on its own. It's actually crazy how we set this up. So if I have one number off, it throws the whole thing off. Suncast freaks out. MG Geek's head explodes. Jonathan leaps off that ledge. And that's it. And we start all over. So that's how it works.
You know what it is?
Yeah.
Mercury in retrograde.
Is that what it is?
I don't know if you buy into any of that stuff, but Mercury in retrograde, I believe, has started, which means all your doodads go crazy.
Yeah, all my wife's friends are writing about that right now.
All the influencers.
All their life's problems. Let me tell you, once you hit a certain age, all my wife's friends' problems all revolve around Mercury being in retrograde. Got into a car accident today. My son is failing school. Mercury's in retrograde. I'm like, no, maybe you drove really crappy and your son sucks.
Listen, don't fall asleep behind the wheel and get a better education for your kid.
It has nothing to do with Mercury being in retrograde. I don't know, man. It's wild. This week we had a really big week for the show. We were on F4W's YouTube account streaming our Royal Rumble watch along. Over 21,000 people joined us. At this very moment, I mean, I think the number's going up, but 21,000 people joined us for that awesome, awesome show. We had a lot of fun doing it. We're going to talk about that, obviously, at the end of the show, but we have a tremendous amount of news to talk about from last night.
Oh, my gosh.
So, Rich and I were speaking about this, and we decided we should go forward with this. So, last night during AEW, at the end of AEW, Kenta showed up. We're going to more details about what was going on when we do the recap, but Rich, did you expect that?
No, not at all. I lost my shit and I yelled at the TV, and my wife was quietly reading in the living room, and I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I did not realize you were sitting right there. I audibly gasped with like a holy shit. Didn't see it coming. Did you expect that at all?
No, you know, he tweeted something like, how long does it take to get from Orlando to whatever, Jacksonville. Or something like that. Yeah. I know that they were working on it. And when Moxley appeared on their TV, their U.S., I guess their U.S. show, right? That's based out in California. Yeah. When he appeared there, I had a feeling they were going to do something because they got to. I'll go through what the story is, but I didn't expect it to be done this way. I thought it would be more done on the New Japan side than the AEW side, but it looks like it's going to be a mixed bag here. So let's begin with the start of all this, right?
Yeah.
When AEW was starting out, they fully intended on working with New Japan, right? Because Kenny Omega was the big asset that they grabbed from New Japan. The Bucks, Cody, Hangman. I mean, essentially, it was a mass exodus out of New Japan to head on over to AEW and start it.
Right.
There was a moment where they were very open to working together. The New Japan side. AEW has always been open to this.
Right.
And so I don't have the exact reason for this, okay? So I'm going to say maybe it had something to do with conducting business in Japan opposed to North America. Maybe it had something to do with sour grapes that you're losing your top talent that really created this boom for you for New Japan.
Right.
But Harold Mage shut down the discussions. And one of the reasons that I've heard, and I think Dave Meltzer spoke about this a couple times, is that when they were in the middle of talking about, you know, what they're going to do and possibly building AEW and what the plan with AEW is, Tony Khan never went to Japan to have a meeting.
Huh. Okay.
He sent the Bucks, and I think he sent Chris Harrington.
Okay.
I think. I could be wrong on that, but let's go forward with that. Once that happened, I think they for whatever reason in New Japan, they stopped taking him seriously. Maybe they were a little insulted that, you know, the reps that were sent were talent, even though they're behind the scenes, right? They're executive vice presidents of the company. But there was an issue here. Also, sour grapes, right? You just stole all my talent. Mm-hmm. We were playing a North American expansion with these dudes, including Jericho, by the way. They took Jericho. So AEW never said, like, well, we're shutting the door. They were pissed. The guys were pissed. But I think the concept was, listen, we want to work with everybody, and we will benefit from this. Everybody will benefit. Wrestling will benefit. If we all work together, we have the top talent here. When Moxley got the championship, he was never intended to hold it this long. He was actually there to legitimize the U.S. championship and to kind of build the U.S. brand for New Japan. Here's where everything goes bad. Pandemic hits. They can't take the title off of him. They refuse to strip him because they're smart enough to know he's an asset for them.
Commodity.
Yeah, of course. Listen, top guy in AEW, top guy in WWE. Do you want to strip this guy and possibly sever that relationship or have him hold a title and owe you this?
Right.
So they made the right call here. Kenta has been teasing this for months now. They finally agreed that they were going to do something in California during those shows. And out of nowhere, we got Kenta at the end of AEW attacking Jon Moxley with Kenny Omega sitting on the floor and just laughing.
Such a good moment. That was definitely for the diehards, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like 100%. That was such a cool moment, too. I think AEW does very well in delivering those cool, like, quote-unquote wrestling moments. Did you watch the exclusive stuff backstage with Kenny and Kenta?
No, I didn't see it. What happened?
So he goes, oh, I didn't know Brother Switchblade was going to send somebody over. And he goes to give Kenta the two sweet. And Kenta turns around and tells him to go F himself. They bleep it out.
Wow.
He's like, go F yourself. I'm not here for you. I'm here for Moxley. And then he walks away. So that's kind of neat how you get that little extra tease of what if we're going to see these dudes who are part of New Japan that live in Florida, Jay White, Tama Tonga, Kenta, do some kind of Bullet Club Invasion thing with the AEW guys and then the Impact guys. So it opens the door, the forbidden door, right, to a lot of cool stuff. Door.
I like that. Yeah. No, listen, dude, I think you hit the nail on the head. So the big question's been, like, when does Okada come over? When does Tanahashi come? When does Ibushi come?
Right.
Don't expect those guys here immediately. Expect, like Rich said, the Florida guys, right? Jay White, very interesting. Switchblade is very interesting. We've already heard the rumors that he's talking to other people. Listen, he's staying in New Japan. That he's not going, but now this door is open. This alliance between Impact and New Japan really started with Don Callis. New Japan really likes him. From everything that's been told to me, this has been a tremendous hurdle for Impact to kind of break this wall that was put up between Impact and New Japan because of everything else that happened in the past. You know, the shenanigans that Impact pulled with Nakamura, with essentially every talent, Okada, and how they treated him in Impact. So that was severed tremendously. And I think due to necessity, the pandemic possibly escalated all of this. Yeah. Do you think if the pandemic never happened in New Japan and forget about New Japan, but AEW and Impact would be working together? I don't think so.
Oh, that's a really good question. Again, I think as far as the Tony Khan mentality goes with wrestling, is I think we would have seen something, but it looked like the stars aligned perfectly for this sort of thing. Like you said, if the pandemic didn't happen, would Gallows and Anderson still be in that dreaded WWE contract that they ended up getting out of? Because they were laid off from the pandemic, right?
Or they would have signed. They had signed a contract before the pandemic. You're right. Yeah, so they would have probably still been there.
So they would have still been there. I think you would have had a very different year of New Japan Pro Wrestling. I think you would. I think Moxley would have been, Moxley and Jericho, I think, would have been focal points in New Japan last year if there was no pandemic. So I think just because of that, that door could still be open. But I really don't think they'd be doing any Bullet Club stuff like they're doing on AEW.
You know, when everybody's like, well, why, how is AEW mentioning? They mentioned Bullet Club, right, on TV last week. Right. And Impact's been mentioning Bullet Club for weeks now. And you've kind of gotten a hint on AEW. This is exactly why. There's a working relationship here. By the way, Harold Mage is out of New Japan.
Done.
I think he's staying till March, from what I heard, for the transition. But a new guy is running the show now, and he was in charge of North America, the North American expansion. So I don't think this is going to be the same company that we've seen that's been very tight and very close. I think they're more open to this. AEW is a smart bet. Now, what happens to the Ring of Honor relationship with New Japan? I think that's done. Or close to
interesting.
Done.
Interesting. Interesting, huh? Like, if that's the case, then you kind of... New Japan has always been in such a great position as far as, like, saying who comes over and who doesn't, right? Because they're a prestigious organization. New Japan doesn't need Ring of Honor, you know? But
New Japan does not, no. No.
No, it doesn't hurt if they have an AEW or potentially like an NWA or like that interesting crossover, you know? Like, what would you... I can't even tell you five people on the Ring of Honor roster right now. And that's unfortunate. You know, we used to be able to name like almost every single person on that roster, right?
No, I know what you mean. Off the top of your head, I mean, you're thinking of a handful of people and that's it. There's no top...
You know, their story is such a great example of mismanagement, right? Or lack of management, I should say. Because really, and this has nothing to do with the guys or even a lot of the people in charge. It just happens that, you know, Sinclair took way too long to dump money into that company to redo their, you know, visuals.
Right.
They did it when they were forced to do it. You know, biggest complaint for Ring of Honor for a lot of people was that, listen, I can see AJ Styles and the Young Bucks on there every week, but it looks like crap. It doesn't look good, which is reality. Right. It didn't look good until they did that whole major upgrade. But by that point, you know, you kind of expose people to a product visually. Other problem was, sorry, Rich, go ahead.
Not only that, but to kind of like expound on that is not only are you kind of relying on like a mediocre visual product, it's like the guys on top aren't, and let's be frank here, the guys on top aren't like financial wizards like Tony Khan is, you know, like his family coming from like that billionaire background, being a billionaire, that's a lot of money. Right. Like you have to know what you're doing. I think Tony Khan has proven himself that he knows what he's doing as far as their finances and connections go, which unfortunately a company like Ring of Honor did not have that backing. You know, like nobody stepped in and said, hey, look, I want to make this look as good as Monday Night Raw. Let's do it.
They could have, but they could have, right? They could. They have Sinclair. They got one of the biggest TV syndicators, network owners. You know, Sinclair owns all this property on TV. Their plan at one point was to buy the tennis channel or whatever. I think it was a tennis channel and turn it into another sports franchise, another sports, you know, sports coverage television product, like an ESPN. And you're like, oh, my God, look, this is where you put Ring of Honor, right? You got a national product. Yeah, it's only in like 60 million or 70 million homes or 80 million, whatever number was. But you're getting them on a national product that a lot of cable providers carry. So they didn't do that. They bounced them around from syndicator to syndicator. I still have no clue what channel it's on in New York.
Right.
And then the argument that you hear from the Sinclair side is, oh, well, it does great in Tuscaloosa on whatever local channel it's on at whatever time. Their concept is small market and not big market. And that was the big problem with their television product. The other problem was, you know, you relied on so much foreign talent.
Right.
Like when that we started going issue. To Ring of Honor, you know, Rick, you and I, 2004, we were doing Ring of Honor shows.
Right.
You know, and that was all homegrown independent talent. You had, I mean, you see who exists from there, right? Daniel Bryan, Cesaro, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, Adam Pearce, Nigel McGuinness,
Tyler Black. Yeah,
Tyler Black. I mean, the list goes on at the talent that they came out of there. But now, you know, the Ring of Honor's peak 2016, 2017 really relied on New Japan. They sold at the Garden.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And let's be honest here. That was more of a New Japan show than anything.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think it was 80% New Japan, 20% Ring of Honor. Even though, like, the Ring of Honor stuff was a lot of fun, I think the crowd was there to see, you know, your Okadas and your Ibushis and your Naitos as opposed to, you know, like a few, like a handful of the other guys, you know? And that was a fun night. Like, you can't really beat being at the Garden and seeing Liger and Muta come out in a battle royal, which was awesome. But I'm interested to see moving forward what Ring of Honor has planned in this new landscape of wrestling. Like, do you think from a business perspective and a fan's perspective that they may have a deal with AEW at some point? You know, it seems to work with NWA. It seems to work with the Impact stuff. Why not add, like, oh no, it's so-and-so for Roosh is here from Ring of Honor.
Here, a couple things. The Transferring Heat podcast in our chat room, by the way, says something interesting. He's like, listen, if Sinclair didn't buy it, it would have folded up. Yeah, Carrie would have folded that thing up in 2010. It would have been over with. So Sinclair buying it was their lifeline. Their mismanagement of not properly treating it as a property of theirs was the big problem on their side.
Okay.
They never looked at it as ours. They looked at it as, oh well, we bought this thing and now it's a television product for our local markets. So
right.
Go back to your question, Rich.
Do you think at some point in the future of Ring of Honor, within the next 2 years, they would cut their losses and say, hey, listen, AEW, we see what you're doing for NWA, we see what you're doing for Impact. Would you mind if we kind of come aboard? And you know, we are more than happy to send a couple of our guys to you to be on TV just to get more eyes on the product. Same, and I'll throw MLW in there too.
Yeah, it's interesting because I know that early on in the concept of creating this secondary, you know, major North American promotion was that you would have one event where everybody would come together, and that's what All In, All Out was, right? All In.
Okay.
All In.
The first one.
Yeah. The first one. That's what All In was.
Put together by Ring of Honor. Used all of Ring of Honor's like backstage stuff, you know? But that was the backbone for it.
But look at that show, right? You had guys from Mexico, you had guys from North America, you had unsigned talent, you had previous WWE talent. That was the mega event.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that was going to be the goal, that you put these events on where it brings all these people that you've wanted to see wrestle together. So you could have a New Japan guy going up against a AAA guy. You could have a AAA guy going up against a Ring of Honor guy. And it was going to create this cool environment for pro wrestling fans and the guys to get profiled like that. Now we are in the territory days again.
Okay.
I mean, really, I don't think, you know, we could talk about all the bad with wrestling, and there's so much bad, right? We'll get to that. But if you think of another moment in the history, the last 60 years of pro wrestling, right? Since TV, since it became a big blockbuster on TV, 60, 70 years. When did you ever have this many options and this many promotions and then this many promotions working together and accessible to everybody? Never.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Now, I'm going to flip the question back to you. Do you think this would have happened if it wasn't for the pandemic in like an odd way?
I think eventually. Somebody asked me that right before you came on, and I would say eventually you were going to see these guys all wanting to work with AEW because they're not going to work with WWE. Even though New Japan has had many opportunities over the last 5 years to work together. Don't think that conversations have not happened. I think a lot of people think that WWE is very, very much in their own bubble, but they do reach out. They did reach out to New Japan a couple years ago, especially when Nakamura went over. So I would say that if this is successful, right? And I'm not talking about today. I'm talking about 5 years from now, right? The landscape in 2026 and 2027 are going to be, it's going to be very different if this is successful, because then you may see the WWE wanting to work with other promotions.
Okay.
You may see that happen. You know, this is not the norm. Normally, when we look at pro wrestling and we look at what we've seen over the last 20 years, you know, since WCW closed, or even when WCW was around, you never saw another promotion invading in this caliber.
Right.
You know, where, right. you know, if you really look, I mean, it's hysterical that you have John Moxley and Kenta in the ring, Hideo Itami in WWE, and Dean Ambrose in a major program, and that's something you could never envision in WWE. Right. You would never envision that match to even matter. But
now it does.
I mean, it to be honest, whenever that match happens, that match is going to be extremely important to the business. The success Absolutely. Of that match. I think this is how, you know, I like to evaluate the business end. And if you're talking about a work relationship and possibly making this into something much larger, that Kenta and Dean Ambrose. And see, I messed it up. Take a breath. Too many names, dude. Dean,
come back.
Hideo, Moxley, John. When you have those two working together, it's going to be a very important moment, because if it is successful and all parties are happy, listen, what we've seen the tease for Chris Jericho and Tanahashi in AEW, right?
Yeah, I think, and especially now that Tana holds that NEVER title, you know, who's to say he can't show up anywhere else to defend it, right?
Oh, yeah, because that's the whole thing, right? Anytime, any place, it's like, that's the thing.
And I think we're getting Moxley and Archer teaming up against Kenny and Kenta at some point soon.
What? Yeah, I think it's next week, possibly?
Okay.
Is it? We're recording the show, so I haven't seen it posted anywhere. I just heard the rumors of that.
It's a lights out match for next week between Kenny Omega, Kenta, and John Moxley. I'm having trouble too. John's the easiest name in the world. John Moxley and Lance Archer.
So is that happening now?
That's happening next week. I'm excited about that. I was not a fan of Lance Archer in Japan up until that last G1. I think was it last year or the year before, where he really reinvented himself. And I like the team of him and Moxley.
Hmm. Yeah, dude, the big monsters. You know what? I want to get to AEW, right? Because I want to kind of touch on this a little bit more. So a little bit more about the New Japan TV deal. So it just came out about an hour ago or hour and a half ago prior to recording this, that they're going to Roku. Now, that is not the blockbuster TV deal that everybody expected, right? There were a lot of speculation happening, a lot of rumors happening. Some of the rumor was that maybe they're going back to Access, which, by the way, I don't take out of I won't take that off the table yet.
Okay.
So I can tell you what I know. I know that they were talking to multiple television providers in North America, and each and every one of these guys, they recognize, and the people that they were dealing with understood the product, right? So it's not like they're walking into a network that doesn't get it. They understood the product. Here was their biggest uphill battle. Well, how do you gauge if New Japan is successful in North America, right? How would you gauge that previously, Rich? You're Mr. Executive. I'm New Japan, and I'm saying, listen, we did really well in Access. What are you going to ask me?
Ooh, see, that's a good question, but I feel like somebody would pass the note to that executive saying, hey, these guys kind of sold out the Garden.
Okay.
You know?
I know. Well, that's their thing, right? But here was their biggest problem.
Mm.
At the time that they were on Access, and I think this is going to be overlooked, so, and this is a really big deal when you talk about, you know, television deals and stuff like that.
Mm.
There was no Nielsen rating.
Okay.
Access was not participating in Nielsen at the time. Now they are, obviously, because it's a whole new ownership and ratings are very important to Impact, obviously. Their Nielsen score is very important and they want to be ranked because that's how you determine the value of your viewership. They weren't participating. So you really didn't have, you only had internal numbers and internal estimates, but there was no hard number. And that really was the detriment to New Japan getting on, I don't know, whatever network. I can't even speculate where they would go.
Fox.
Let's say Fox. Let's say FX or whatever, which it wouldn't be. But
that was their big problem, that they had no gauge. So they're still working on a TV deal in North America. It's not over. It's not like they're not going to get it, but they did announce that they're going to Roku TV, which does it mean anything?
Are you let down by this news?
Well, I'll tell you why, because what you've done is you've alienated, you know, every other streaming provider.
Okay.
You've alienated Fire TV. You've alienated any of the smart boxes. You've alienated Apple TV, Google TV. You're on one specific platform. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to mean much.
How many people have Rokus, though?
Oh, tremendous. Millions. Tremendous. Okay. But here's the other problem, right? Those are legacy purchases prior to the Fire TV and Apple TV kind of booming. You've seen a dwindle in that number. I mean, it's slowing down. It's spreading out. Like, so the streaming platform, right? The streaming set-top box market is no longer Roku. Before, it was like 89% Roku boxes.
Okay.
Now, because of all the different options and the way people consume, it's no longer about the device. It's about the provider. And you're not going to be able to get this on the other devices. So the other problem is you may have a Roku in your living room, but you may not have it in your bedroom. So now that becomes a pain in the ass for you, right? Roku wants this because they think they're going to sell 30, 40,000 units of Roku boxes.
Sure.
That's why they
want. Do you think they will?
I don't know. You know, they got about 60,000 North American subscribers to New Japan, to New Japan World. If every one of those people purchased a Roku.
So I got a question for you. So now, like, this news came out like about an hour ago, right?
Yes.
Now that show, and they said there's going to be an hour long show weekly on Roku, right?
along with on demand content from previous events.
Okay. So does that 1 hour show just stay on Roku, or can you access it on New Japan World?
I don't know. I think that's a good question. It's going to be, and listen to this, it's going to be Fridays. New Japan is partnering with Roku. It's an hourly, it's a 1 hour program Thursdays at 5 p.m.
Okay.
I assume that's 5 p.m. East. Premiering February 11th. Oh, no, it's going to be 5 p.m. across all of America. So depending on where you are.
Wow, okay.
So it's going to be America, Canada, and the UK. It's going to be, 5 p.m. everywhere. So they're going to, I guess, release it that way. All right. I mean, not a blockbuster thing, but it's still something. It's a leg.
No.
You know, they put their leg in the door, through the door.
It's cool. You know, I feel like you and I were really hyped on, like, yo, is it going to be HBO Max? Is it going to be Pluto? Which Pluto is acquiring all kinds of wrestling content right now, right?
I believe Pluto is... IPTV, whatever that wrestling streaming thing is, that's who it is. It's not, they're not doing it on their own, but they have, I forgot the service. I just spoke to someone about it too, but they're gonna have GCW on there. They're gonna have Beyond, ICW, but ICW, Jack Sabbath, not the other one. So all right, whatever. You know, it is what it is. More wrestling.
I'm sure we're going to watch it at some point. It's just another extra hour of wrestling that we got to find.
It's just another extra. But back to the main thing, right?
Yeah.
Right. So AEW right now has a work relationship with New Japan, Impact Wrestling, and the NWA.
How awesome is that?
The NWA is more absorbed in, right? It's not. There's no highlight on the NWA promotion other than the women's champion, but I think it's going to change when Nick Aldis shows up, you know?
Oh, for real.
Nick Aldis is there, and they start doing more back and forths here. This open concept to AEW is great, but, you know, I think they're a lot smarter than the other people that have attempted this, where they start relying on the talent. I think they have way more homegrown talent that they're going to feature compared to what Ring of Honor did. I just think this is a positive. There's no going back from here. I don't see that happening. I think this is the future now.
I got a question for you now.
Mm-hmm.
So arguably, like, most of the AEW roster is pretty over with fans, right? Now, what was that magic sauce that made that work opposed to, like, a Ring of Honor? You know what I mean? Like, Jungle Boy is a good example. Like, everybody loves Jungle Boy, right? And he hasn't been on the scene too long, but you have guys in Ring of Honor who've been there forever who, I'm not going to say Jungle Boy is a household name, but there is name recognition.
Within
like,
wrestling.
Do you think, right. Like, why do you think that is? Do you think it was BTE? Do you think it's just like the way it's presented or what?
I don't think there's one answer. I think, listen, being in front of anywhere from 800,000 to a million people a week plays a big part in that, right? And I don't think Ring of Honor has ever had that kind of viewership, ever in the history. I mean, I don't think they came close to that. So obviously you got more viewers seeing you. Also, you have the marketing arm of Turner promoting your product, and you have the marketing arm of AEW promoting your product. I think he's been... It's a Vince McMahon philosophy. If you tell people this is important, people will agree that it's important.
Okay,
you know that's how wrestling. That's how Vince did it. Vince killed the territories based on making people feel like no, this is good, this is legitimate. Even though the wrestling wasn't great,
right?
In 84, 85, 86, the wrestling was terrible in WWE. There were no opponents for Hogan. You had one or two big names, and that's it. It was just Hogan squashing everybody. You didn't get the matches that you got in Mid-South or in Florida or in the NWA. It was a different product. Right. But the perception that this is good is what created the boom.
Right.
At the end of the show, I want to touch on Bruno and Hogan for a minute because we didn't get a chance to do this, but I think it's important to talk about. But... I don't know, man. I'm excited for this, and I know you are.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Where do you want to go? Do you want to talk about AEW?
Yeah, you know what? Let's talk about AEW. It was a jam-packed show, and then we can go really quick into the Rumble stuff, right?
Yeah.
So yesterday was AEW's beach break, and the show pretty much, I feel like the draw of the show was the main event. The team-up between... Holy moly. Mox and Death Triangle versus Kenny and the Good Brothers. And honestly, like apart from the Kenta run-in, that was a banger of a main event, right?
Oh man, holy moly, what a match. And I mentioned this to MGG because he called me right before going over production notes because he gives me production notes now.
He tucks you in at night?
Yeah, he tucks me in at night and gives me the production notes. So did you notice, first of all, those guys in that ring, right? You had Moxley, you had Kenta, you had Phoenix, Penta, you had Phoenix, you had Kenny, and who else?
Gallows and Anderson,
okay. The difference, right? If you want to talk about the difference in their wrestling ability compared to the rest of the roster.
Oh, my God.
And it's so noticeable, right? Like on the WWE side, they do a very good job at making that not noticeable between camera cuts and the training that these guys get. You know, listen, I don't think minus one or two people on that roster, on the WWE roster, I don't ever watch a match and say, my God, these guys are green. And on WWE main stage product.
Okay.
Because the quality difference, you know, listen, the top is the top. They're great. But the mid-card is phenomenal in WWE.
Yes.
As far as pro wrestling goes. I'm not talking about character development or anything, but you look at these guys and you say, my God, these guys are all great. They're all very good. The lowest of the higher-end mid-card is still very good. On the AEW side, it gets a little wonky because they're all much younger. They haven't had the TV exposure. They haven't had the wrestling exposure. You know, these guys are wrestling 20 nights. You know, some of them are only doing about 25 nights, matches a year or 50 matches a year. And they're starting out. They're not going to get to that level very quickly. However, I don't know. Dude, watching this match, these guys are all seamless. Every one of those guys in that match were so high as far as their wrestling ability goes. It really exposed everybody else.
It's really nuts when you see a main event like that. And I'll agree with you. You know, like it's still, I think, a lot of people expect like a polished product, but AEW is still a work in progress. You know, like they've only had like a year and a half of television, if any. But your main event guys are next level. You know,
oh, like, yeah, like Rich, I never, you and I never knock on the talent, you know? Like, if they, no. Listen, if someone has a bad match, they have a bad match. But it's, we know how difficult of a career this is, and difficult right. of a performance this is, to be able to go and do a pretend fight and make it look as legitimate and capture, you know, millions of people every week to yeah. get out of, you know, the suspension of disbelief is a major play in this. But watching this main event, holy moly, the gap between the good and this is such a tremendous gap, and WWE doesn't yeah. have that. And I'm not saying that as a knock at WWE. I'm saying that as an applaud, because even if it's stale, the product is stale, the in-ring, there's never a disparaged gap like this.
Right. But again, I think that's your kind of like the work in progress mentality of it. And when AEW needs to deliver, it kind of over delivers. You know?
Oh, yeah. Like,
when was the last time you saw a main event on Raw or SmackDown that compared to that main event last night? Right. Like a six man main event.
You watch Raw or SmackDown, you got a six man main event, you're turning it down, right?
Usually.
Usually, all right. Nothing really is going to happen.
They did that last week, right? With AJ, I think it was SmackDown, where they had like the 4-on-4. And it was fun, but these guys put together like your wrestling with high spots kind of 4-on-4. You know, a lot of stuff makes you gasp. Like Rey Fénix, I say it every week, like this dude is going to be AEW champ one day, right?
If he doesn't kill himself, yeah.
Exactly. Like he's a wild. The dude's on fire. He's like a cannonball. Yeah. But it's also like that interesting mix of here are a bunch of dudes that were in the WWE system, but they don't necessarily have to wrestle like that anymore, you know? So the shackles come off, like Pac, Moxley, Good Brothers, right?
Listen, it's and a different show, right?
And yeah. 100%.
You know, someone said this, that's a wrestler, and I'm like, I guess so, right? Because I'm not an actor, so I don't know the difference. But he said, listen, it's like taking someone that's a theater actor. He's a Shakespearean actor, right? Big on emphasis, big on the emotion of the words and the way the delivery. And then now you take him and put him in a sitcom that's very, very popular.
Right.
You know, that's what WWE is, a television product. It's not a wrestling show. I think we all know that now. It has wrestling elements. But it's more treated like a television product. And listen, I find sitcoms corny. Yeah, sometimes they're good, but that's what they're attempting to be.
Right.
And that's a problem.
Nothing too serious. So like moving on, you also had Shaq. You have like the promo in place. Shaquille O'Neal and Jade Cargill versus Cody Rhodes and Red Velvet. That's taking place on March 3rd. That little video package they gave Jade Cargill made her look like a monster.
Oh, dude. Like, first of all, how many matches has she had?
I can't even tell
you. It's not much.
She was, I believe, I don't want to say rejected from the performance center, but she did have a couple of tryouts, if I'm not mistaken.
She's a runner?
At the WWE Performance Center.
What's her athletic background?
I think she's a track person / bodybuilder.
Someone knows. I forgot what it was. Basketball, D1. There you go. Division I basketball. Okay, perfect.
What a crazy aesthetic, right? And as much as I don't want to see Shaq wrestle, I think it's kind of fun, you know? And if anybody's going to wrestle with Shaq, Cody is the perfect person to walk him through that match, you know?
Do you have a giant come out and do a face down with Shaq? Like, who could you bring out?
Is Luchasaurus that big?
No. I want someone we haven't seen.
Kevin Nash?
Bring Kevin Nash out. Who cares?
Makes his return. You know, I think it's going to be interesting. How physical do you see Shaq getting in this match?
You know what? I'm going to tell you. He's always loved pro wrestling.
Yeah.
Right? Shaq, I think people don't realize, like, he's been involved to some caliber in pro wrestling since, like, 94. So... I think for him, this is a big treat, but yeah, I think he's going to do stuff. I know that he's trained before this. He's done stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what, how much does he need to do? Choke slam? A power bomb?
I'm betting he's going to do like a Vader bomb.
He's
going
to do a dive to the outside, right?
Pope. I think I should really do this tope suicida, Cody. What do you think?
Can you imagine he just goes in the air and just stays? He just doesn't move. He's floating now. What do I do, Cody?
Can I do one of those hurricane runs?
I love them. I do. I don't know, man. I think it's fun. Impression. You know what? TNT crossover. They're probably not paying him to do it either, so that's good.
They moved it, right? They moved it because of his NBA commitments.
Yeah. He's going to be a good chain wrestler.
Oh, I can't wait.
He's gonna start Frank doing catch as can. Yeah. Call me Carl Gotch.
Just call me Vern Gagne. It's like, whoa, this guy's amazing.
Yeah, my God. Look at those wrist locks.
So that's gonna be fun. Listen, they made the rounds on social media with Snoop doing the dive. So who knows what they're gonna turn Shaq into, right?
Yeah.
So they also announced on AEW a women's championship eliminator tournament, which is mainly Japanese talent versus the AEW talent. And I think that's a cool list of people.
So the Japanese talent, they're going to have matches in Japan for whatever. I forgot the promotion that they're working with over there. So I'm curious, are we going to see this on TV? Because they're not doing the matches in Florida. They're doing the matches there. And then eventually, I guess, whoever is the winner is going to come over and have a match. But I'm curious if they're going to put this on TV. They're going to show clips. They're going to put it online. I don't know. I asked this morning. I haven't gotten feedback yet.
Okay. You want to run down who's going to be in it?
Yeah.
So we have Aja Kong, Yuka Sakazaki, Vini. I'm not sure about this. Emi Sakura, Ryo Mizunami, Mei Suruga, Rin Kadokura, Maki Ito, Serena D, Britt Baker, Tay Conti, Thunder Rosa, Nyla Rose, Anna Jay, Layla Hirsch, and Riho. This looks like it's going to be, I feel like this is a good, this is going to be a fun thing for wrestling fans in general, you know? And that AEW women's roster is just getting better and better. We saw a great match between Britt Baker and Thunder Rosa yesterday. Tay Conti's really shining. I think there's a lot of room for Layla Hirsch to grow and Anna Jay. And it's the return of Riho, right?
The return of Riho, which I think they could definitely use. So do you think relying on the Japanese talent benefits them?
I think it gives the fans something special, and I think it does benefit them because it's something different, you know, where it's like, I think AEW is really trying to nail all of their niche markets, you know?
Because I'll tell you why. I feel this way. In the beginning, they were relying on Japanese talent, and I don't think it worked out well for them. I think they got forced into not having them because of the pandemic, but they've done a way better job with their women's division due to necessity, due to not having access to all the talent that they had planned on having access to. With that said, listen, Penelope Ford, they've built up. Britt Baker has improved unbelievably. Yes. Big Swole, you know, she's coming up also. They have also the NWA stuff has helped them a lot too. So they have a interesting core now,
right?
That they're building. You know, they're starting from scratch here. I think they've had a better women's division now than they did pre-pandemic.
I agree.
I don't know if this is going to muddy it up a little bit because you were able to tell based on, you know, engagement and viewership that they were not really doing well with the women's matches. Now, with that said, it's a different, you know, it's a year and a half in, so maybe it's going to be a little bit different. But listen, I'm cool to see Aja Kong there, but does it matter to the viewer?
Again, I think it's just something fun that AEW is doing, and I think they're finding their way in a lot of stuff, like what appeals to who. But I think in my perspective, the overall grab and hook is we're bringing you wrestling that you won't necessarily see. Here's this guy from Japan named Kenta. This is his story. Here are all these female Japanese wrestlers that we're using on American TV. Here's some cool stuff for you guys, you know? And then that plus the Shaq stuff, or when they did the stuff with Snoop Dogg, it's like they're trying to appeal to every niche to get more eyes on that product, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Listen, it may work.
Absolutely.
Do you want to go into NXT or you had more AEW stuff?
I was going to, do you want to do NXT or do you want to quickly do the Rumble kind of fallout from that?
Let's like do real NXT. Quick or no? Yeah, let's do NXT and then we'll go into Rumble. Yeah, because a lot happened on NXT as well.
A lot happened on NXT. Mainly, I thought the highlight was Edge showing up. And I feel like I marked out 100% because the probability of him wrestling Finn Balor at WrestleMania, I think, is very low. But just the fact that they had him on to tease that was very good.
Yeah. So we were talking about this before we started the show, and people are like, well, why is Edge there if he's not going to face him, right? Is it just to hurt AEW's numbers? It is not just to hurt AEW's numbers. So this is something that WWE loves to do, and that's figure out what someone's draw power is, right? Their power ranking power. Yeah, he went to AEW. He was on NXT and to disrupt a big, you know, big competition show. But you're also going to understand now what's Edge's true draw power.
Okay,
put him on NXT. Let's see what that quarter hour does. Let's see what that segment does. Let's see how that boosts the show. You know, are you talking about a 300,000 person boost in viewership? You know what? If that's the case, then they could easily hit 1 million viewers for that segment.
Yeah, I do think this may be the litmus test for other stuff that they may want to do. Edge is the perfect guy to do this with because he just came back from an injury. He's a beloved household name. He has a lot of clout behind him. He's also not part of that regular roster just yet, right? He's still on his return. So him showing up at NXT, if it pops the numbers, you could easily see, let's say, like a Randy Orton show up, right? See how that does. Maybe a Roman Reigns or a Kevin Owens, see how that does. I think if they're after those elusive ratings, that might be the way to do it. And this was their litmus test to see if it actually moves that dial a little bit, right?
So we've seen in the past, we saw them do this. They did that with Charlotte, right? Who else have we seen show up on NXT from the main roster since going to USA?
Kevin Owens.
Okay.
He showed up in that
for the program. The War Games match.
War Games match last year, right?
Okay.
That's Charlotte. All I get. The Bailey. I think Bailey was in the audience last week.
Finn obviously has gone down there. Yeah. Sasha went down there. Bailey, like you said,
Becky Lynch showed up. But I mean, this would be kind of. Do you want to see Edge versus Finn Balor for the NXT Championship at WrestleMania?
No. Edge versus Balor? No, not really.
Okay. Would you like to see that in general?
I think the other option is way better. Yeah, no, dude, I'd love to see it. 100%. <Okay. laughs> Oh, AJ also showed up. I forgot. That is right. That's who I was thinking. AJ Styles showed up on NXT. I would definitely like to see that match happen, just not at WrestleMania, because the other outcome match is so much bigger. I think him and Roman Reigns is such a bigger option.
Yes, I agree with that. Do you want to see that happen? I think like watching Edge wrestle anybody is going to be a pleasure. But since it is WrestleMania season, do you think the big swerve was showing up on every show and then Thursday night, the end of SmackDown, is Edge spearing
Friday
Roman
night.
Reigns?
Friday night?
Yeah. Is Edge spearing Roman Reigns and then pointing at the WrestleMania sign?
I hope so. I hope that's it, because I want to see him and Edge. I want to see Roman and Edge. I don't think Drew and him. Listen, Drew and him is not the big money match. I think him and Roman are. And of course, there's a story with the spear, and there's also a story from last year's Rumble.
Fair enough.
Because Edge got eliminated by Roman.
Okay.
So, you know, you have the story there. And I think that was the big plan last year, was to set up all these mini feuds. Him and Styles was going to be one. Him and Orton, which we saw. Him and Roman, which we may see now. We may not see now. I don't know.
Right.
But, you know, they set up a lot of these mini things. And also Christian coming back, which we'll talk about. But so TakeOver Vengeance Day is the official title. They're going back to the Vengeance pay-per-view name, which I'm into this. Them using the old WWE names. They've used Halloween Havoc. They did In Your House. Now they did Great American Bash.
Yes, right? They did. Yeah, they did Great American Bash. This is a stacked NXT event.
Oh, big time. Big time.
Yeah. You have the classic Dusty Women's.
You got all Dusty those Dusty final. Women.
Dusty Women. Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez versus Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell or Shotzi and Ember Moon. That's going to be good. That women's division is super strong right now in NXT. You have the Dusty Men's Classic Finals, MSK or Yagato de Fantasma versus the Grizzled Young Vets or Timothy Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa. I think Thatcher and Ciampa are going to take it.
Thatcher and Ciampa. I'm into that. Yeah, why not?
Yeah. You have the North American Championship between Johnny Gargano and Kushida. I think that's going to rock. Kushida takes it.
Okay.
Women's Championship, Io Shirai versus Toni Storm versus Mercedes Martinez. I think Toni Storm takes it finally.
See, here's the thing. It is the time for her, right? This is Absolutely. When you pull the trigger on it, because they've morphed their character.
Yes.
They've evolved it, but there's only so much you could do with that character. 100% I agree with you. They need to put the title on Toni now.
And then you have the NXT Championship, Finn Balor versus Pete Dunne. Well, I hope they give him a lot of time for this, because I'm looking forward to this match.
Yeah. I think Dunne should take the title.
You think so?
I think so. I think put the title on Dunne, open Balor up for something else on the main roster. They could use him, you know?
Raw or SmackDown?
Who could use him? You know what? Maybe put him on Raw.
Okay.
What if it's him and Balor? Balor and...
Drew?
Drew.
I'd be very cool with that.
I don't know if that's the plan. I definitely think there is something. We'll talk about WWE in a couple minutes, but after Royal Rumble, you kind of see where the holes are with this. Sure. Into this show, man. I'm into it. Royal Rumble Fallout. We did a watch along for the Rumble. We had a lot of fun doing it.
Five hours
of talking. I was dead on Monday. I couldn't even talk after being on the air for that long.
Dude, thank God it was a snow day. Like, I told my wife, hey, I'm going to be useless the entire day because I'm not going to be able to shovel until tomorrow. And I just chilled out, dude.
Did you pay somebody to do it? Or you shoveled?
So on Tuesday morning, I was able to clear out most of the pathways. But then there was one of our neighbors who had like the mini dozer, and I gave him like $40 and he like got all the cars out. And cleared up all this stuff, because we usually get plowed in. He cleared up all the stuff, and if he didn't do that, I would have been out there until like 5 p.m. It was a lot.
Yeah. I got a snowblower, so I just went through the whole thing and just I was done. But
nice.
Let's talk about Rumble. The big stories here, obviously, Bianca Belair, women's Rumble winner. A lot of speculation if she actually won. Did you see the photo where both her feet are on the floor?
Yeah. I mean, I think that was just like a gaffe.
They ran that spot way too many times in the same exact location, and they ran it with her twice. I was not crazy about that spot. With like, okay, let's just restart. It was okay, it was fine, but I wasn't nuts about it. Okay, you know what? I think a lot of people were upset that she won. I think she's a very good pick. If she's going up against Sasha Banks, that's the story there. I think there's something naturally organic about that, where they could have a great back and forth. And I think this will be a good showing for her. You want to present her in a way that she's going to be able to get over with the promos and everything else. Sasha Banks is a great opponent for her.
Absolutely. And plus, like, this is WWE's moment to make another female wrestler. Like, she's going to get made, quote unquote, with this match. And people love her. There's like a big groundswell of Bianca Belair supporters, which, you know what? Like, she's living up to that hype so far. A little bit of a rough start in NXT a few years ago, but she's come such a long way. And you can tell that she's put in so much work into her in-ring that and her aesthetic that WWE is going to push her to the moon now.
Yeah. Men's side, big story. Edge wins the men's Royal Rumble. They did a really clever ending, and I really enjoyed it. How Edge was, you know, Randy Orton didn't get eliminated. He was escorted out because of an injury, which, by the way, I think we need to put that away at this point, right?
Okay.
We need to stop the number three or four, like a favorite getting hurt and having that linger over your head. I think we could go beyond it. They've done it a couple times already.
Right.
But it was still a clever ending. Edge is the winner at 48 years old, right? Winner Crazy. Of the Royal Rumble. A lot of people very upset over this, over the age thing.
Oh, get out of here. Dude,
you know what? I want to talk about that a little bit too.
Yeah,
you want to go into
please.
It now? We'll talk
yeah,
about
Yeah, dude.
Rumble.
I want to hear your thoughts okay. about Edge being 48.
Well, Edge is 48. Carlito showed up. He's in his 40s.
Good Lord.
You had Goldberg on the card. And listen, I'm not saying this is my thought to this, okay? I'm going to start off with that before I get the attacks that I like the old timers. Not everything is a one-size-fits-all, right?
Right.
It's fine that you don't want to see Bill Goldberg in a world title match. And it's also fine for you to like that Edge one. It's also fine that you like Sting or you don't like Sting. It's whatever. Everything is your, whatever you like is what you like. But the big discussion now is, why does WWE rely on these guys so much in recent times? Right? That's a big question.
Yeah. And huge question.
And the answer is obviously draw power and casual viewers. Yeah, the hardcores are watching, but the casuals have kind of plummeted. Rich's favorite term, the P2s and the P3s are not here as
talk
much.
To me.
Yeah, let me give you my P's. You want me to talk about Cume? I'll talk about Cume later. But
I put that in my rice sometimes. Yeah.
So somebody wrote to us on, you put Cumes in your rice? I like that.
Yeah, some Cume.
Yeah, I put peas in my rice. Somebody wrote to me, he's like, why is it so much more now? We never saw this in the 90s. We didn't see this in the 2000s.
Right. Well, and, you didn't need it.
Well, if they could have, they would have. Right? You got to look at it this way. And this is something that has not really been brought up. A lot of the talent from 20 years ago in 1999, right? That would have been talent from 1979. These guys worked a lot of dates.
Yeah.
They were not in the condition. First of all, they didn't have national television exposure, right? So that's one. They wrestled, whatever, 250 to 300 nights a year. Not easy travel. Life was not easy for these guys.
Right.
They didn't become millionaires. A lot of them did, but not all of them. They didn't become instant millionaires or close to it where they had a much easier, relaxed life. You know, you hear stories, guys were making, you know, X amount of money on the road. When they stopped wrestling, they had to go and get a job selling cars. It's the old football player story.
Right, right.
You go from the pro ball to selling used cars for your wife's uncle. That was the reality of things. So the reason why we're seeing a lot of these guys, number one, there are a lot of them are healthy. You know, there's an entire generation that was able to realize that living that life on the road, especially the guys from the late 90s, they saw what happened to their peers. Either they died or they can't even walk. And these guys, these select guys, stayed healthy and they're still able to wrestle. Where opposed to 20 years ago, those guys were not, you didn't have the national exposure, so they're a household name for a lot of these guys. And you also didn't have the health that these guys have.
100%. But you know what WWE used to do was, do you remember that whole Heath Slater bit where he would get beat up by a different legend every week?
By a legend, yeah.
But they gave those legends like a minute to work, you know, like hit their finish and that's it and pop the crowd. Where as opposed to now, you know, Edge worked the entire Royal Rumble. He worked the entire Rumble. He looked great. And the other thing I kind of want to mention too is like, WWE did a very odd thing in the early 2000s when it came to the legends, because in 2002, Hogan was undisputed champ, I think, right? Or was it 2003?
Hogan's the golden goose, right? Like I take him out of the equation. But for every Hogan that returns, right? Till the end of time, WWE will use Hogan. Hogan and Andre and Warrior and Macho will be Rock, Hogan, Hunter. Those guys will be immortalized till the end of time, right? They have left reality, and now they're characters, they're cartoons. You could see it next to me. You know, you never had this. Didn't exist. These didn't exist for those old, you know, guys from 30, 40 years ago that were wrestling. So it's a very different thing, and recognizability,
recognition.
My brain. Hold on.
Uh-oh.
I got to reset my brain. Uh-oh.
Take a deep breath.
Uh-oh.
Take a deep breath.
It's all going black. It's over.
Oh, no.
They're easily recognizable.
Okay.
There you go. So,
you did it.
I did it. Thank God. I mean, listen. Look at Carlito looks better than he ever did.
Somebody put Carlito's head on John Cena's 2006 body.
Same. Yeah, that's you said he has John Cena's body from 2006. It's great. Do I look at that as a negative that he's there? No. You know what? He needs to make a living too.
Absolutely. You can't begrudge anybody for making a living. And also, like, don't you think Vince looked at him and was like, holy balls, kiddo. What happened to you?
Oh, yeah. They definitely saw him and said, oh, my God. But, you know... You know, the big question, you know, Christian's back full time, mid 40s, Edge is back late 40s, Bill Goldberg's in a match, Brock Lesnar's coming back, obviously, John Cena possibly coming, you know, but the roster is a lot older. And that's not due. And by the way, I think the average Rumble, I think it was like 37 years old, 36 and a half years old, the average age of the men's Rumble. Opposed to, I forgot there was a statistic, and it was like 31 for the other one. I forgot what they were comparing it to. But guys are staying healthier, therefore they're going to get older.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're going to stay active. Listen, what WWE did with that big boom was that out of necessity they had to create talent because the old talent left. I'm not defending using old talent because obviously it gets stale. But you're not having that turnaround as quickly as you did. A guy The Miz would not be on TV still if this was another era.
Right. These guys, Miz is a great example of, you know, like he's worked the schedule. He's been there for a million years. He's not very injury prone. He works safe, you know. You could kind of make a Ric Flair comparison and like they both work very smart and to further like have career longevity, right? If you think about the guys from like the late 90s through the 80s too, they're all banged up. Like Austin had to leave because he was banged up. Mick Foley, you know, Kevin Nash is a good example. Even Shawn, like taking a lengthy break because of an injury, you know. Now you got guys like AJ Styles who are in their 40s who look like they can go with anybody on earth and haven't slowed down.
Yes. I mean, listen, you're going to slow down. It's going to change. But I think the comparison with age is it's a difficult comparison because if we go to 2000, the peak of pro wrestling, if you took a guy from 1980, a top guy from 1980, and you put him in the main positioning, you know, the main event, how would that guy do?
Right.
How would Bruno Sammartino do in the year 2000 in WWE? Not well. It wouldn't happen.
I think it was also a different time where if Bruno came back in the early 2000s, I don't know if it would be a joke.
Listen, you young whippersnapper.
But I feel like it would just be like a quick, like one-off thing. As opposed to, like, I think the Sting return is a great example. WWE pulled out all the stops to get Sting there to have a couple of matches, right? If Bruno was healthy around that time and able to still go, do you think they would have given
years old.
Him...
I'm sorry, he would have been 65 years old then.
Do you think they would have given him, like... If he was healthy, good to go, do you think they would have given him, like, a marquee match?
I think Bruno's a bad example because he was a lot older. But let's think who 1980 to 2000, right? 20 years. Who was popular in 1980? 1980 WWF. Let's see. Who was their champion? Okay. 1980 alumni. Here we go. 1980s. I want to see 1980. I want to see a card. Show. All right, let's do this because this is interesting if you think about it. I know we're on a tangent here, but
which is fine.
1980, 67. Okay, let's see the garden here. Okay, 1980, sure. Madison Square Garden. Here we go. Broadcasting live on MSG Network, featuring Vince McMahon on commentary. You had the main event. Oh well, you had Hulk Hogan,
sure.
WWF Tag Team Champion Tito Santana with a suplex. Rene Goulet, awesome. Rene Goulet in a match. You had Bob Backlund, WWF champion, Hensika, right? That was your title match. Andre the Giant and WWF champion, IC champion, Pat Patterson defeated Bobby Duncan, and Ken Patera. Larry Zbysko defeated Bruno Sammartino with Arnie Scullend in his corner. Mm-hmm. So Larry Zbysko, here we go. You know, Kerry Von Erich was here. Here we go.
Wow.
You know what? He's the only one that could have survived in 2000. I think Kerry could have had a match.
Okay. All right.
Nobody
Fair
else.
Enough.
I mean, I don't count Super Hogan healthy. Here, right? Because Hogan is an exception. But very interesting time. There's nobody.
Yeah.
Tony Atlas, which you still saw him on. Peter Maivia. Ivan Putski. Gorilla Monsoon. Larry Zbysko. Larry Sharp. Different era. Didn't work. You couldn't translate this.
You know, I also think the quote unquote part timer returns are fascinating because in terms of WWE, I think the more guys that they can not give much direction to, the happier they are. You know, they're probably not giving much direction to Edge at all.
By the way, here's one. Superfly Snuka, Jimmy Snuka. You saw him on TV until, 10 years ago.
Yeah, brother.
Brother. So it's an interesting comparison. I think we need to remember that when we talk about people's age and how old they are. Listen, I understand the argument that the younger guys need to be featured more. But in the way that they're running it, it just, my God, it sucks for them. They don't get that exposure. They don't. It's too convoluted. Let me just put it that way. And we'll move on to something else. Very convoluted setup here. Yeah. Lars Sullivan. Your favorite, Rich.
Your favorite.
My favorite. Lars is gone. poor, stupid Lars.
Oh, well.
That guy, listen, obviously he has tremendous issues, right? There's a lot of problems with Lars. Sean Ross Sapp actually did an interview with him. He spoke to him.
Oh, fascinating. Okay.
And pretty much Lars said he asked to leave. Asked for his release. Being in that company was a terrible detriment to his mental health. Okay. He will most likely never wrestle again. He wants out of wrestling totally.
Crazy.
He blamed himself for all of his problems, said it was all him. It wasn't anybody else. He spoke very highly of WWE.
Okay.
And said, his big stupidity caused all of this.
Sure. All right. Moving on.
It's actually like you talk about self imploding, right?
Great.
Sometimes people just set themselves up for failure, and that's what happened here with him. He just couldn't cut it. Nothing, hope he gets his anxiety and everything else under control, and he's able to do well in his life. But just wrestling was not for Lars.
No.
A lot of what ifs, though. What if he had that match with Cena?
Sure. I've a lot of the Lars stuff reminds me of like Ryback also for some reason. Maybe it's because like they're both like peanut looking dudes.
They are peanut looking. They do look like peanuts. Peanuts. What else do we have here, Rich? Anything else?
Let's see. Let's go back to this. We actually did cover everything that we wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Oh, here's one thing. I want to talk about Christian a little bit. I didn't get a chance to bring this up. So Christian's back. Edge and Christian definitely going to be doing tag teams, right?
I would love the SummerSlam match to be Edge and Christian versus the New Day and the Usos.
SummerSlam Edge and Christian. You know what? Put the IC title on Christian. Put the world title on Edge. Have them have all the titles, and I'll be happy. I'll go home.
Oh, forget it. I think Christian could have a good showing. Yeah, absolutely.
No, there's a tremendous amount they could do with these two. Christian looked like $1 million, and obviously he was training for this, but he didn't get cleared until the week prior.
Oh, that's very interesting. I did not know that.
And I don't know what he's doing. If he's doing the cryogenic stuff, whatever that is, that Joe Namath swears by and Daniel Bryan was doing for so long for concussions and.
Right.
Everything else. I don't know if he did it because I know his issue was concussion. So, but whatever it is, they were not clearing anybody for a very long time. And there's been definitely a shift in attitude with clearing these guys. Edge is a great example. He had a career ending injury that was, I mean,
It was so dangerous that he didn't even have another match.
Right. They just pulled him.
He just forfeited the title. So someone's saying you printed your notes double-sided. I did print my notes double-sided. I did. Stupid Mac. I can't even see what I'm doing here. I'm like, why am I looking at the same notes here? Do you want to do Q&A? But I'm excited for Christian. Let's do a Q&A.
Yeah, sure. Guys, if you have any questions, please submit them in the chat room. Usually they are on the notes, but we're going to have to go back and get some scoops.
Yeah. Submit your questions in the chat room and we'll do our best to answer. While we're doing this, let's pay some bills here. I want to thank everybody that tuned in on F4W. Guys, we are on WrestlingObserver.com. Our show's posted there every Thursday following this. We're also on GFKNetwork.com. We're also doing watch-alongs on Wrestling Observer. I know a lot of people really enjoyed hanging out with us, watching the show with us. It was a lot of fun. I think we had like 20-something thousand people that hung out with us, which is always awesome, right, when you guys are hanging out and we're able to make this a lot more fun, because watching wrestling alone, not so much fun. So, I got the notes here. We got some questions coming. And where are we posting these questions? Here we go. John, what do you think Damian Priest's upside is on the main roster compared to Keith Lee when he got the call-up? I don't know. You know, they all face a very specific issue, and that's heading on over to the WWE, to the main roster. I always feel that that's always a big problem for these guys that get over. Damian Priest is a little bit different. He obviously, listen, watching Ring of Honor, you know who he is, but he didn't have the hype momentum that Keith Lee did. Sometimes that's a detriment to you when you get to the main roster, when everybody's talking about how amazing you are, how great you are, and Vince or another agent will see something they don't like, and that's it. You know, I call it the CM Punk complex, the CM Punk issue. This guy was talked about as being the second coming of any top wrestler you could imagine on the independent, you know, growing 2000, you know what, anywhere from 02 to 05, that's all you read about was CM Punk. And when you saw him, it was not what you had envisioned in your head of who he was. I always go back to that. Punk's biggest thing was the way that they spoke about him being this unbelievable pro wrestler with this great look. It never, once they got a hold of him, they're like, this is it. I'm not saying that that's Damian Priest's problem because he looks unbelievable, but I think the hype with a lot of these guys is a lot more than what the main roster thinks of them. And I think Keith Lee suffered from them. I think Keith Lee came up, the people were really behind him. I also think not having any fans for Keith Lee was a major, major problem, because you couldn't really gauge how over this guy was. You know, once you got the fans out, it exposed a lot of the stuff that WWE doesn't like about a big guy, you know, doing all these moves, and they kind of screwed it up. So I don't know if Damian Priest is going to have the same problem. It looks like he's going to be in a program with Bad Bunny at WrestleMania against Miz and Morrison. But
I can't wait.
You know what? That's a super high profile match.
Absolutely. I think there's an argument to have Bad Bunny on WWE TV. I think he's popular enough and is a big wrestling fan enough that it's fun. You know, like I'm not cringy about Bad Bunny being on WWE.
I'm not either. A lot of people don't like it. They don't like Bad Bunny.
They don't know who he is.
I think they don't realize worldwide, internationally, how popular he is. I think on Instagram, yeah, he has more followers than WWE does. This guy's videos have 500 million views on YouTube.
Yeah, and they're fun.
Listen, whatever, he's a fun guy. They're going to do this anyway, so might as well be with someone that absolutely loves wrestling and has a song about a wrestler. Why not? You know, I don't see it being as big of an issue. They do this every year. They like to have a major crossover mainstream star show up, and I think he's fine. He's exactly what they wanted. So
plus they lost the Snoop Dogg.
They lost the Snoop Dogg. They did. You know what? Are they interchangeable in WWE's eyes?
I don't think they're interchangeable, but I do think there was a scramble, because
hey,
I feel like,
get me the lanky rapper.
I think there was a scramble when they saw, like, Snoop Dogg is an easy get for them, right? Because Sasha Banks, there's a history there. He's shown up to a ton of WWE stuff. Yeah, I'll just throw Snoop Dogg on. But then Snoop Dogg's like, no, sorry, I made a mistake. Sorry, I thought Vince. I went to the wrong office, you know? And then he's on AEW, which is awesome. They were probably like, oh, who could we get? Who is so popular right now? And who has a clear love of what we do that we can get them? And remember, Bad Bunny had Stone Cold Steve Austin in a video like last year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Flair also. Booker T. The dude's a wrestling fan. I think they're going to capitalize on that.
Rappers love wrestlers. So absolutely. There you go. Get me the lanky rapper. Or maybe he wanted Pitbull. They were in Florida. He's like, I want Pitbull. Get me Pitbull. If I never hear Pitbull again, I'm fine.
Come on, baby.
Rhea Ripley, Raw or SmackDown, better fit? What do you think, Rich?
I think Raw is a better fit for the character, and I think Raw needs that dominant female again. And you know what? She was my pick for the Royal Rumble, but it was cool that it came down to her and Bianca Belair.
Do you like her theme?
I do.
I hate the word brutality. I hate how they say it in the entrance. Uh-huh. This is my brutality.
Yeah.
I think she's going to be a good fit anywhere. She's a star, so I think she'll get over no matter where she goes. I don't think that it's going to be a this or that, depending on, you know, for her career.
Well, also, like, think about, like, your two call-ups of Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley. They both look completely insane. Like, they're so jacked, right?
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah.
And you put them on, I think that's like an interesting, like, the new crop of NXT talent where it's like, ooh, what are you feeding these people?
I'm watching Mustafa Ali right now on a WWE Network exclusive on the USA. Now, I guess this is Raw from, I don't know if this is, how old this is, but Mustafa Ali leading this ridiculous stable is so stupid. It's so stupid. I know. Yeah, listen. He's a phenomenal wrestler, but this is so ridiculous with the it means nothing.
Listen, he's trying to turn chicken shit into chicken salad.
Yeah, and it's very difficult.
But he's doing a good job, I think, being a prick, you know?
Oh, he's gotten himself over, for sure. I like this character. He just didn't need the doofuses with him. He could have done this alone.
Yeah, I think the names also kind of hurt them.
Oh, God, the names are terrible.
Right? Like, if you were booking this, wouldn't you give them, like, cool names, like, to start with? And
you know
something
what? When I see them, Rich, I think of exactly the names that they have. Mace.
Slapjack.
Play-Doh.
T-Bar.
Ugh.
What names would you have given them? I guarantee you.
No, those are the exact names. I wouldn't have given them any of them. The names are perfect for what they are. They are a Slapjack and they are a T-Bar.
Imagine if one of them was called Mr. Gonzo.
You know what? I love it.
Self-fulfilling prophecy.
Dave D. Is Carlito's brother still signed? No, they're gone. Carlito's brothers are gone. They got released a while ago. Lewis asks, who do you team Carlito with? I don't know. I think, you know, him and Jeff Hardy were a decent thing, but obviously I think they could lead into a match, him and Hardy. Start him off there. You know, I would love him to be in the Hurt Business.
Okay. That could work, but you know where I think he would fit in perfectly?
Where?
NXT, the group with Gargano and Austin Theory.
It's like a comedy thing? I think that'd be ridiculous. Like,
but they're enforcer because he's like the older vet and he's so much bigger than them.
I think you would expose how tiny they are. The little fellas.
Carlito's a big dude.
Carlito's a gigantic dude. Yeah. Yeah. Transfer Neat Podcast. Do you think Edge and Christian versus Usos at one point before Mania? I think you got, well, it depends. Are they both back?
I think one of them is still hurt, right?
I think one of them is still hurt. I think that match has to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
But maybe you're going to get, you know, you'll get, you know what? What if you get Edge versus the healthy Uso, who's a Jey Uso, at WrestleMania, and you get Roman versus Edge?
Okay.
And you have them do a tag team match before.
I'm cool with
whatever pay-per-view. I'm cool with that too. That's fine.
I feel like there's going to be a turn with the Roman stuff where, like, maybe on SmackDown we're going to see him joined by Kevin Owens and they start making like this bigger faction.
I don't know what the plan for him is. Obviously, you know, they're going to have to continue this tribal chief thing for another year.
It was very promising when he started it because you automatically thought, like, he's going to get both Usos. He's going to get Tamina. He's going to fight Rikishi. He's going to eventually get up to The Rock.
Well, I think all that was leading up for The Rock. You know, why do it now? But, yeah, listen, it's still phenomenal. I still love it. Nakamura, happy to see him as a face, Bachelor 3000 says.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know why the Ultimate Warrior's on our screen right now. Do you see this?
We just got $4.99 from Basher 3000.
Nice. There you go. That's why Warrior showed up.
Thanks, buddy. And he said Carlito and Priest will likely team as the Puerto Rican princesses.
I would love the Puerto Rican princesses. Great tag
team. I'd be okay
with
that.
Do you think we're going to see Goldberg at WrestleMania? Yes. We will see Bill Goldberg at WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. 100%. He'll be there, and so will Sunberg.
Sunberg is gigantic now. Mm-hmm. He's not a little guy. And Corey asked, do you really think Balor goes back to the main roster? Yeah, I think, you know, that was always the plan. He was supposed to only be there till SummerSlam, and because of the pandemic, obviously, he stayed. But they definitely need the talent over there.
Night after WrestleMania.
You think the night after WrestleMania he leaves? Well, here's a question for you. I got one for you. What do you think happens the night after WrestleMania? Because they're touring, right? They're going to be traveling.
All right. As far as like the crowd goes, or as far as the wrestling, like what am I going to see?
Wrestling.
I'm going to say, okay, night after WrestleMania. Well, that's a Monday night. That's Monday Night Raw, right? I was thinking of the SmackDown after WrestleMania. Edge is holding the title and he gets challenged by Finn Balor.
Okay. Do you think you get a big return?
I think the Monday, I'm going to say Drew retains, right? Whoever he's facing. And then that Monday is a big return and Drew loses the Monday after WrestleMania.
Oh, you think he'll lose it?
Yeah, I think he retains at Mania. And then the night after there's like a gigantic return or a gigantic challenge and Drew loses that title. Like so, Brock Lesnar shows up Monday night.
Oh, well, Lesnar's a great option here, right? Because that's possibly the SummerSlam match if Drew can do, because they're going to have the rematch for sure. You know, they're in a very interesting moment. And I think when we talk about WWE, this WrestleMania is not going to be the big story. I think it's going to be what happens after. That's the big story here when everything goes up in gear because they're forced to travel. I think a lot of people don't realize this. They're losing Tropicana because of baseball. So you can no longer, they can't use baseball stadiums because it takes them a while to set up the field and everything, and it's not great for the grass. So they're out of baseball stadiums. They could do a residency in a football stadium again if they need to, which I don't think they plan on doing. So they want to go back to smaller venues, maybe 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 people in the building and make it look good. You know, I wrote that recently. Someone's like, well, that's not a lot of people. I'm like, you know, even during the peak SmackDown stuff, like 2016, 2017, there were episodes of SmackDown where there were only like 4,500 people in the building. You didn't even realize.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And you kind of caught a glimpse of it when you were like, hey, all that stuff is taped up back there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think that's going to be the big post-WrestleMania stuff. Listen, nobody knows if that's going to happen because everything changes. Right now, everybody's reporting that the numbers are really good. Things are improving, which let's hopefully it'll stay this way. Hopefully everything will improve. And by September, we'll be going to wrestling, you know, major wrestling shows at the Garden again.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we'll see what happens. It's a great question here. By the way, guys, this Friday, I'm appearing with Sean Ross Sapp after SmackDown on Fightful to discuss SmackDown. So I'm going to be on with Sean. Sean showed up. You know, we did a crossing of the streams here on this watch along on F4W. I think people were shocked to see Sean Ross Sapp on a Wrestling Observer product, which I'm very proud that I brought everybody together. Jim Valley called in. Garrett Gonzalez called in. We had Denise call in at the top of the show, which she hit a home run, which we're going to have her back very soon. So a lot of, you know, a lot of moving parts here, a lot of great collaborations, and I'm hoping, hopefully we'll continue doing this.
Absolutely. You were like Vince McMahon in the 80s, uniting the territories.
I united the territories for my greater plan.
Listen, I still think that at some point we need to do the podcaster battle royal.
Listen, I will. Can I eliminate you and then do one of these? You know what I'll do? It'll be like the final four, right?
Sure.
And I eliminate you, and you'll look at me, and you'll laugh, and I'll go, and then I'll get tossed out by Dave Meltzer,
and then I'll catch you and put you back in.
Put me back in, yeah. Dave will just throw me out.
Who skins the cat?
Who skins the cat? Who skins the cat from the podcast, from the wrestling podcast world?
Yeah.
I
think you and Sean simultaneous
skin the cat.
Come back in.
Alvarez definitely skins the cat, but I was trying to come up with someone ridiculous to skin the cat, and yeah. I couldn't come up with a ridiculous answer.
Chico Alvarez
will do it. Perfect. All right, guys. That's it. That's it for this week. We'll see you all next time.
Later.
No. Wait. Rich, your podcast.
Oh, hey, hi. Behind the Counter's back, guys. BTC 2.0. Every Saturday morning, I'll be posting a new video on YouTube at BTC Rich X. I hope you join me.
Beautiful. And we'll start posting it on gfknetwork.com too. All right, that's it for this week, boys and girls. See you next time. Bye-bye for now.
Later.